Jamie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're doing well, and I'm really excited to bring you this week's podcast. We actually chatted to Carol May some time ago, and then I thought I'd invite her back to talk to our, we did an exclusive session for coaches. But this interview, I thought I'd share with everyone, because it's just, there's just such great information and great encouragement here. And what we're talking about, the topic is ADHD. If you're thinking, who is Carol? I haven't heard about her before. She is a health coach and a ADHD and nutrition specialist. And this is why I particularly wanted to bring this topic from this perspective. I'm sure you will have come across people in your life, or maybe you personally have had a late diagnosis of ADHD. And it, you know, one of the questions I ask Carol is it that it's more prevalent now, or is it that we're just talking about it more? But either way, I really love her approach, because she's taking the whole person approach, and we're talking about nutrition and, you know, the right sort of lifestyle elements that can support it, you know, rather than just sort of having a label and taking medication and feeling like it's you know, a huge problem forever. Let's try and work with it and try and make something of it. And what I really love about this chat is that we start to realize that many of the things that we discuss, many of the recommendations that Carol makes, actually, they're just great. It's just great advice for everyone, really. So much of what we do in our sober coach training, we really try and cover things from a holistic perspective, so that when we work with clients, we're looking not just at quitting alcohol. Of course we want you to quit alcohol. I absolutely want you to quit alcohol. Your life will be so much better without any. But that's never only the bit. It's never only the final piece. It's super important to quit alcohol, to lay those foundations. But after that, it's all about the what's next. How do we stay sober? How do we stay stable? It's so much of it, of this is about regulating our nervous system, but focusing on the right mindset, you know, all of these pieces that just help us towards personal growth and mastery generally, you know. And for so many people, once they've quit alcohol, they're able to start addressing other things. I do think it's fascinating, the link between alcohol and ADHD. I mean, alcohol and just about everything, but really with ADHD, there's definitely a pull for dopamine, isn't there? There's often a huge dopamine seeking element, which makes you know, alcohol feel like a quick fix. So it's not surprising that it's a factor in many cases. So I think you'll find this interview with Carol really interesting. I hope so. And I'm thinking of doing an event at some point, which I think could be interesting as well. So yeah, I really hope you'll enjoy this interview with Carol.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you.
You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions.
Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So let's do a bit more of a formal introduction. So Carol May, the ADHD health coach. I know that you also work around binge eating and all of that stuff and do a lot around the link between ADHD, eating disorders, behaviours, dopamine regulation. It's all fascinating stuff. And I know that, you know, you do a lot as well, which I think is really interesting in the work that you do, Carol, around how people can plan, you know, and how they can kind of make this fit their lifestyle, because you know, it's not a death sentence. You know, we can work with it, right? So I love the way you just sort of help people get out of overwhelm, even with very specific things like meal planning and stuff, which can you know, these things can be tricky, can't they? So just tell me a little bit about your background then. When did you discover you had ADHD, and how did that sort of manifest for you?
I was diagnosed about 25 years ago when women were not diagnosed. Mm. But my sister, 30 years ago, she set up a charity here in Hertfordshire to support parents of kids with ADHD and autism.
Oh, wow. What's that charity called?
It's called ADVANCE, ADVANCE. And I know it's 30 years because we had the celebration last Friday. And then the psychiatrist there suggested that maybe the parents needed to be tested as well as the kids. And that led to her and I both being tested and diagnosed. And I mean, in usual sisterly fashion, she goes, "You should get tested." And I go, "Who says?" And she went, "I'll pay." Okay. Yeah. And then it was just, then I just dropped it because we didn't know about it back then. You know, we didn't know about the effect, particularly on women, because we thought it was something that mostly boys and men had. I think we can all agree that it's all over social media now. Mm. And
well, I think a lot of people now do talk about late diagnosis ADHD, don't they? And is that, you know, let's get this question out of the way. You know, is it because more people have ADHD, or is it simply because we talk about it now? Whereas it's, you know, 30 years ago, we didn't.
Yeah, it's the latter. It's definitely the latter. I mean, my father had ADHD, and I know that he wasn't tested, obviously, because back then nobody was. But I can look back, and that's one of the things that happens when you're first diagnosed, particularly late diagnosed, is that you look back and go, "Oh fuck," excuse my French, but you know, all the things that I could have done, I didn't do, or even I did do. And I embarrassed myself, shamed myself, whatever it was. And I can look back and see my father's behavior. A lot of that were typical ADHD traits, and he would have been 100 now. So it's not new. And I think more people are getting diagnosed because more people are talking about it. I mean, I think there is you know, there is a fine line. Between here comes a train.
Oh, okay. Ready, guys. Okay, steady on.
So,
hold on.
there is a fine line between now, you know, that we're talking about the pressure on teachers to, you know, support parents with their children. And I think, you know, that there a lot of people are talking about, well, it's just naughty children, and we're going backwards with that but for women, adult women who are, well, what's your adult, your class is late diagnosed now. Late diagnosis could be from 25 up to 80. You know, there are women in their 80s being diagnosed. So, you know, and with that comes a lot of grief. There comes a lot of guilt, shame, and a feeling of, oh hell, what do I do with this now?
Absolutely. And there's a real link there between, you know, in the work that we do, because lots of the people that we work with are want to quit alcohol. You know, they're recognizing it's no longer serving them, but, and they don't necessarily realize that their sort of search for dopamine, as it were, is all connected. So what have you seen with the link there between the way people who have ADHD can have that real craving for alcohol or food? I mean, I know you talk a lot about food as well, but yeah, just tell us a little bit about those links.
It's the same need, and that is for dopamine.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And so, and it's to, hang on, I just need to put my glasses on because I just put a couple of things, wrote a couple of things down that I thought were important to say, that it's, you know, it depends on the type of ADHD you have, because there are three different distinct areas of ADHD.
Are there? Oh, go through those for us.
So there's the inattentive bit, which is the, with little boys, it's the can't sit still.
Yeah, yeah.
With little girls, it's the brain won't stay still. Right?
Right.
And so it feels like, to girls and women, it feels like you've got a lot of tabs open all at the same time. And I used to have, like, I don't know, so many tabs open on my laptop sometimes that I couldn't see what they were because there were so many of them. And it's because I was afraid that if I did something, or I didn't, if I clicked on it and I let it go, I wouldn't remember to go back to it. So the inattention can put a lot of stress and anxiety out there. Then you get the true hyperactive bit, which is, again, for women, it's thinking about a lot of stuff at the same time.
Yeah,
I call it plate spinning. Now, a lot of us have talked about plate spinning because that's what women do. We know, we're mothers, we're wives, we are, we work, we, you know, we do all these different things. And we're trying to do this like the old entertainers used to.
Yeah, know, spin plates, literally.
Right.
Yeah.
But it gets to the point where for ADHDers, it becomes overwhelming. And then again, more anxiety, because there's the guilt and shame because you can't keep up with all of this stuff that's expected of you.
Yeah.
There is physical hyperactivity, more common in boys and men, much more common. And you might see it in little girls, but they will grow out of it because girls mask. We learn to become the nice, polite, acquiescing people that we are still expected to be by society.
Yeah,
it's quite fascinating, and so so you got the, and then you get the impulsive ones. So the impulsivity is where you spend a lot of money, you buy stuff on the fly, you might create major credit card debt. You will love fairgrounds and roller coasters. You might go on a date with somebody even though you know that it's likely to be dangerous. All of those
so
things.
Again, it's thrill seeking, isn't it? It's dopamine
thrill-seeking.
Yeah,
thrill seeking.
Yeah,
because it gives you that dopamine hit.
Yeah,
right.
So
shopping gives you the dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And alcohol will, it actually takes back the defenses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that you can do those things without thinking at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So where is the, sorry, these questions are ever so basic. I do apologize.
Right.
But,
no worries.
But where is the, what is the reason that someone with ADHD is seeking this dopamine? I mean, we all seek dopamine as adults, don't we? We all seek pleasure. I get that. So what is the missing link, in inverted commas, or what's the issue? Is it that that when you've got ADHD, it's much harder to kind of regulate your nervous system, so you're literally craving the dopamine, or is there an actual neurological reason?
Yeah, both of those things is the answer to that. So, you know, ADHD and AUDHD, which is people who have the autism bit as well. It's a neurodevelopmental condition. I don't want to call it a disorder because it isn't. It's just a different way that our brains are wired. And so that, you know, and it's a condition defined by the inattention, impulsivity, and hyperactivity. So you've got all of that going on. Hang on, I've lost the thread.
Sorry. Oh, no, I was just saying.
That's another thing. That's another thing with ADHD,
Thank you for demonstrating.
So I used to do that when I used to, work in groups, you know, in actually in a room with groups doing therapy and stuff. And I would say to them, I'd be talking away and I go, hang on a sec, what was I talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Here. Where was I?
And I used to use a flip chart, you know, with paper on it. I used to write everything down on it. Yes, so losing track is one of the issues.
Yes.
Right? So, yeah. And I think the thing is that it is about the emotional regulation. So, and it's all to do with the frontal lobes of the brain.
Okay.
And so this is where it all goes on. And this is where it either works or it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Could you just explain more about that then for anyone who's unsure what you mean about the front part of the brain?
So this is your thinking, feeling part up here in the brain. And when you feel overwhelmed, you cannot do that. And one of the issues with ADHD is a feeling of almost constant overwhelm in the world as we know it, the neurotypical world as we know it, with all its expectations, which I think have been heightened by social media.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. I asked earlier, is it because more people have it? And although you said not necessarily, it's just that we're talking about it more. It could be that it's not the case of more people have it, but more people are displaying difficulties, as it were, because it's all been made worse by things like social media and the pressures
absolutely
on us all.
So, you know, emotional dysregulation is part of it. And, you know, I describe my grandson is 18 months, and that's why I'm here at my daughter's. I look after him for her 3 days a week. And he goes from 0 to 1,000 in a second. Right? Because he has no emotional regulation.
Yeah.
Right? And as we get older, we learn to regulate how we are in a public place and with other people. Now, for ADHDers, it's hard. And because what we want to do is actually talk about it straight away and actually go, no, that's not right. You know, that person shouldn't be doing that, or, you know, shouting at the TV or shouting at people in the street for doing something which society says you shouldn't do. Because most of us don't. Most people will hold back. They'll talk about it afterwards, but they hold back. Whereas ADHDers and AUDHDers are more likely to want to do something about it.
But, you know, there's a beauty in that as well, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
There's a beauty in just getting it out
totally
and saying what you think. I mean, we don't all want to be restrained, do we, right?
No, we don't. You know, I mean, I saw a video on YouTube today, and it's I think she's a member of the London Assembly or something, this woman, and having a go at nearly everybody, or the people on the left of the chamber, I think it was something like that, for calling the people on the right hand side of the chamber scum. And she was saying, how very dare you? How dare you say that anybody is scum? I wouldn't call you scum. How dare you? Now, in that sort of situation, I'm not saying she's got ADHD, but for me, that is how, you know, as we are taught in society, and particularly as women, not to do that.
Yeah, stay quiet.
But ADHDers will find that very hard, and that's where the stress and anxiety comes from. And then the overwhelm, which they will want to relieve in some way.
Yeah, exactly. And alcohol becomes a coping mechanism, food, of course, binge eating, all of this stuff. So with the work that you do then, where would you start then with someone who's got the dopamine seeking thing going on? Would you try to help them get some balance around their nutrition? Would you kind of start from that place?
I think the place I start with, first of all, is telling them that they're normal. Right? And then asking them what do they want? What do they want? Because I think now, again, going back to social media, and women in particular feel so much pressure to, eat in a certain way, look a certain way, and be a certain way. And the advent of GLP-1s has made that worse.
Yeah, the weight loss
Yeah.
tablets and dry,
So,
and
and so we talk firstly around, how do they feel about all of those sort of things? Because mostly we don't talk about those things, and it's important that they feel heard.
definitely. It's very linked to the work that we do as sober coaches, where what we realize very quickly is that there's never actually a case of somebody who is drinking more than they want to, and they've rocked up for coaching, who doesn't have low self-esteem. It's always underpins it, always. And depends how you address that, what terms you would use, but it always fits under
Absolutely.
that, doesn't it?
So then, we talk about really simple ways to help their body and their brain to function, and that is a combination of food and supplements, because I was never a great supplements person when I first trained many years ago, but nowadays the food environment's very different, and we also understand that with the amount of processed foods that we all consume at some in varying amounts, that our brains lack the right balance of omega-3 to 6. So I was
Absolutely.
told when I was diagnosed to take very high doses of EPA fish oil, and it was an experimental thing at the time. My sister took medication, I took the alternative route, and it's interesting to see what people experience, different people experience, and for women it depends on how old they are, where they are on their menopause journey, if they've started it, whether they're post-menopause, and all of those sort of things, because our hormones make all the
Yeah,
difference.
massive difference. I can imagine that for sure. I mean, there's a lot here. We obviously can't go into all of it,
No.
but I find it fascinating that I do find it really fascinating, this link between, well, obviously the hormonal picture is going to come into it, the food, the binge eating, the alcohol for people who go down that route, or whatever else it might be. And I think that sometimes I'm guessing that what you aim to do when you're working with clients is help them figure out how that, what processes or whatever they need to be able to get through each little piece. I mean, I know you talk about meal planning. It seems like a small thing, but actually it's probably a bit of a game changer for clients, is it?
It's a massive thing. It's a massive, massive thing. And I know from my own experience that you have your ups and downs. And and I was fortunate in that my children ate everything that I put on the table. That is very rarely the case these days. My grandson eats everything at the moment, but who knows later on. And but if you have neurodivergent children as well to cope with, and you've got children who are diagnosed with ARFED, for instance, then they're only going to eat about 10 beige foods.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got that to deal with. You've got the texture of food to deal with. Texture's a big, big thing.
Yeah.
Big thing. And then you're, as a mother, you're thinking about nutrition, you know, what's good for them, what's not good for them, and everything else, and your own.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing as well, would I be right in thinking that someone with ADHD, particularly if they are, as you say, like a busy mum and all the rest of it, it would be easy to ignore your own hunger. And in fact, we have this a lot. Again, as sober coaches, we'll have clients who say, oh, the really difficult time for me is when I'm preparing the children's tea, you know, and I find myself reaching for a bottle of wine. And we have to say to them, hold on a minute. It's actually that you're hungry. It's not that you're craving the alcohol. You're just hungry, for God's sake. Have your dinner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't wait till your husband comes home at 8 o'clock. Have your dinner.
Yeah. I mean, I used to eat with the children. Mm. And because mostly children don't want to eat on their own anyway.
No.
Right.
So tell me a bit more about the meal planning then, and how can we make that simple?
Yes. Yeah, so one of the things that I find with the majority of the people that I've worked with is that they do best with, and this is, you know, controversial, no carbohydrate until the evening. So no toast, no wraps, no bread, no potatoes, no rice, no pasta during the day. Because it affects their focus. It makes them dopey, and it plays havoc with their all the receptors in their brains during the day, but they need it in the evening,
right,
to help them go to sleep.
What about the sugar then? I mean, not that I'm advocating sugar, obviously, but where sugar comes into it, where do you place that then?
Yeah, so that is of course connected to the alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there is a woman who I follow. Actually, she may well have retired, but her daughter's taken on the business, and she wrote a book called Potatoes Not Prozac, and it was about her work with alcoholics. And it's a tiny, thin little book, quite old now, but it was all based on the fact that it was all about an addiction to sugar. And so I usually find that is in play. Definitely. And so the best way with that is cold turkey. There's no other way to do it. And I've done it myself. And I think all of my clients that I've done this with, it was a sharp intake of breath, you know, cold turkey, sugar. But what they find is that within 3 to 7 days, they're off it, and they don't crave it.
It's like when you're in the old days and you used to have sugar in your tea, and then you reduce it down, and then you have one without. And if somebody then did give you a cup of tea with sugar, and it tastes vile.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I find is that particularly those clients who are on pharmaceutical medication for ADHD is that because it contains an element of appetite suppressant in the medication. And so when the medication drops off, they drop off a cliff. It's usually about between 3 and 5 in the afternoon, sometimes a bit later. It depends how they've been titrated. And some people will actually have lower amounts of the medication, but twice a day instead of one lot once a day. But what you'll find is that if they are used to using alcohol, they will use their ADHD medication in a similar way.
Yes, that's interesting.
So, but they fall off a cliff. That's when they want the sweet stuff. That's when they would go for the alcohol, which is tea time.
Yeah.
UK Health Radio.
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And I'm guessing that, you know, it's very interesting what you say about carbs. When I'm working with somebody who wants to quit alcohol, particularly in the early weeks of quitting alcohol, I recommend, you know, nutrition is key, obviously, to help regulate the brain chemistry. And I recommend a bit of protein with every meal. You might be, not saying a steak. It could be something small, but a bit of protein with every
meal.
Yeah. Is that it? Would you agree? Because I've actually seen it happen with clients. It literally, I had one client that I've said to some of the coaches that I work with, I so wish I'd videoed it. I so wish I'd videoed her transformation.
Really?
All she did was start putting protein in with every meal. I mean, she just started having a couple of boiled eggs for breakfast, and then she had a bit of chicken with a salad at lunch or whatever. She didn't change much else.
No.
But she added in the protein, and the difference in her was chalk and cheese. I wish I could have videoed her because she looked different. Within a week, everything had changed. Her mood had changed, everything.
Yeah.
It's incredible the difference it makes. But we forget, you know, people will eat, you know, they'll have, I don't know, cereal and fruit for breakfast, and they'll have vegetable soup for lunch, and they'll have pasta for dinner, and there's no protein the whole day.
Nope, that's right. So what I do with mine is I increase the protein. They have lots of berries and salad and vegetables. And we look at low carb, very low carb versions of things, which you can get now. Yeah. and so, you know, and we make sure that they've got easy to eat stuff in the fridge.
Yeah.
So, and I do it myself. So I hardball a whole box of eggs.
Yeah.
So I've got that in the fridge. I have hummus in the fridge. I have cheese. I may have some cold meat or whatever, depending. I don't eat a lot of meat. But and obviously you can get smoked salmon and all that sort of stuff. But and it sounds quite, you know, people go, oh, you know, it's a lot of money and everything. I say, okay, we'll just stick to the eggs. If you just keep eggs, then they're already, even if you just keep them peeled, so you can just actually eat one. You know, because if it's that bad, that's what you'll have.
So I suppose what you're saying is that this comes back to this prepping, doesn't it? We've got to be able to just find enough time to do a bit of prep, because we're going to feel so much better in the long run when we do. Yeah.
But it isn't about, you know, prepping all the week's meals on a Sunday or anything like that, because I never ask my clients to do something that I wouldn't want to do myself.
So for you, it's more about making sure they've got snacks on hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, things that are easy to eat. Make sure they keep nuts with them at all times, if they can eat nuts.
Yeah.
because they're a great source of protein and healthy fat.
Yeah.
And they'll fill them up. You know, if they're hungry, they'll eat them. And also just, you know, there are so many quick and easy things to do. So, I mean, I saw, can't remember her name, the dragon lady that is from Newcastle. What's her
name? Yeah, Sarah.
Sarah. Because she's just been diagnosed, and she was having a smoothie today that was based on bolotti beans. So it was 100 grams of bolotti beans.
Yeah, you can sneak milk, anything in, can't you?
A bit of chocolate and a bit of yogurt.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Nice.
Absolutely terrific. Really quick. Yeah. Right. Really quick. Yeah. So, you know, and also for my clients, I say it's about having the means of quick cooking.
Yeah.
So, you know, George Foreman Grill will do you a piece of salmon or a slice of bacon in a minute. You know, it doesn't take long. you can, an air fryer, something else that works really, really quickly. You don't have to make food complicated.
Yeah. So I guess it is really that simple thing of just being able to feel as though you can get back in control, because you do that little bit of prep that makes your life easier.
Yeah. So, you know, and it is about having stuff in the fridge and freezer that will last if you don't use it.
Yeah.
So that's another thing.
And do you find then, Carol, give us a little success story. I mean, maybe yourself, but do you find that by being able to take control and have these healthy snacks and bring back the protein and just do these what are relatively small changes, that it really makes a massive difference? I mean, we, you know, for people who are quitting alcohol, you know, if they're dealing with overwhelm as well and anxiety and ADHD and you know, it can just all feel a lot, can't it? Can feel too much. Do you find that this really is the key, this kind of getting this nutritional piece right?
It is. And I've always experimented on myself first before I've ever asked clients to do something, because that used to annoy the hell out of me with a coach that would ask me to do something that I knew she hadn't done. And so the real key for me with, and for myself and also when I work with clients, is teaching them how to connect with themselves again, their body, its needs, and their hunger. Because we lose that ability to know that we're hungry as opposed to anything else. So, and that a little is better than nothing at all. You know, a little good food, you know, two eggs with some avocado in the morning is so much better than almost anything else you could have. When your brain really craves the protein and the fats.
Yeah, it's really true. I think it's really interesting what you say about getting people to be able to listen to their body. You know, it's an interesting one. One of the things we talk about quite a lot is obviously when people quit alcohol, they very often get instant sugar head on, you know, sugar cravings. And we kind of try and encourage them to ask themselves, you know, well, is it actually the sugar that I'm wanting, or is it that I want some sweetness in my life? You know, would something else do it?
what does it represent?
What is it really?
Because we always, when I first trained in psychology of food and also around weight loss, you know, it was always, what does it represent? What is it that you need? And what are the emotions that you're feeling at the moment?
Exactly. So it's very rarely that you actually do need the crap food or the alcohol.
No.
Well, never in the case of alcohol.
No, I mean, it can be that you're angry, you're lonely, you're pissed off, you're whatever you are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, or you need a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, human touch is really...
Or you need to go and move your body. That's the other one, of course.
Or the other one is, moving your body, right?
Yeah.
So you need human connection.
Yeah.
All of those things. But it can be a hard question to ask oneself because we don't usually want to hear the answer.
No. Well, typically, you know, we're not terribly good at finding resources to put in place for ourselves, are we? It's one of the things that I think certainly when people quit alcohol, they realize they're going to have more time. So they actually have got to look at, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to put in place that lifts my spirits for a while? You know, because we know that we're going to be seeking that dopamine. So what can we do to just do something that lifts us, even if for a short time? And we try and encourage people to get back in touch with the things they used to enjoy, because for many people, their worlds become quite small.
Right.
And if we can remind ourselves, well, actually, you know what? I can go for a walk. Or I always remember one of my clients saying she remembered that she used to go rollerblading. She said, there's a place nearby. I'm just going to do it again. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's finding those little things.
I discovered cold water swimming.
Yeah.
Right in the river. And there is a clean river where I live. It's a chalk stream.
Nice.
So it's a clean river. And it's like, yeah, you know, and actually, you know, then I learned from somebody else that just bobbing about in the water, not necessarily swimming, but moving for over 20, at least 20 minutes. So you could be doing anything. That is actually all about, let me have a look. I wrote it down this morning with her, and it was, because, you know, my brain doesn't remember all these things. No, I haven't written it down. Anyway, but it gives you a kind of a massage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's all about dealing with the fluid in the body and everything else. I'm sure you can remember the right word for it, Janie, but at the moment my brain doesn't.
No, it's fine. But you know, I know, I get the sense of what you're talking about. You know, we talk about how if you're feeling very anxious or upset, one of the best things you can do is just actually shake it all out.
Yes.
Allow your body to take it, because, you know, we do a lot in our head, don't we? And we try and go back into our head and we'll meditate on this and think about it. Actually, you know what? If you're really in a state, just shake.
Yeah,
do
shake.
What animals do.
And, and it's
release
about
the trauma.
It's about moving, for a woman, it's about moving her hips.
Yeah.
Apparently, as well, nice. Along with that. So, yes, that's all to do with somatic healing.
Somatic healing, absolutely. I mean, I could talk to you for hours, Carol, but just briefly before we finish this little bit. I know that what you do is we've spoken a lot around food and how you might sort of start to regulate your emotions. But do you have just a really simple tip for people who have ADHD, who find time management's a very businessy word. I don't really mean that. But just,
I know what you mean.
You know, what's the tip for keeping track of stuff? Because I think that can be so difficult when you've got everything coming at you and you've got appointments and you've got this and you've got that and you've got stuff to do and you kind of just end up doing none of it.
Mm. Yeah. So I have a paper diary.
Yeah. I like my paper.
I can't cope with it just on my phone. And also for me, it is about, I'd have two things, which is body doubling and accountability.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about body doubling. Right, great idea. Remind us what doubling. It is. You literally work with someone else, right?
Yeah, so I tell my partner what it is I have to get done.
Mm.
And then I say to him, you can just sit there. I don't need you to do anything. I just need you to sit there. And I've done this when it comes to decluttering, which of course is a whole big area of ADHD work.
Because
a friend of mine is a professional declutterer. And she will come and she'll say, okay, I'm going to sit here for an hour and you are going to do the work.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But we talk all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the work. And it is effortless.
Yeah.
But
it is
about knowing what it is you want to achieve and telling somebody else who can hold you accountable.
That's
to
right.
It.
I've heard that there are, you know, there's like online things you can sign up to where you just body double with other people, which
there are.
I mean, what an amazing idea.
Yeah. and you can, I've done it with people all over the world. So you book in for an hour and you can spend 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes, just asking each other where you come from, what you do, and then you get on with your task for 50 minutes, which is the ideal time. And then you come back together and did you achieve it or didn't you? And that person could be anywhere else in the world. I started doing that during COVID.
And you're so much more likely to get it done. You're not going to just go, oh, do you know what? I think I'm just going to put the washing on instead. There's someone else there.
Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great tip.
And as I say, accountability, it's really important as a coach, you hold your clients accountable. They agree to it. They have to agree to the plan, but you have one. Because it might sound strange, but actually for ADHDers, that's what we welcome. We need that.
Yeah. Need accountability. Definitely.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So Carol, just remind us of your website. I know you've got a book that's going to be coming out.
I'm going
to hold you accountable to that because I asked you if I can promote your book and you said it's not out yet.
No.
I'm going to hold you accountable. And you've all heard it here, right? For getting your goddamn book out.
Yeah.
So just give us your website for now.
So my website's not working at the moment, but so I'm on LinkedIn. So find me on LinkedIn as the I'm Carol May, the ADHD health coach.
Right.
And eating disorders therapist. Okay. And I've just started a Substack.
Love it. Thank you, Carol. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.